All square at the Battle of the Bridge. Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Real Football Cast. I'm your host Dan Tracy, and in the next 60 minutes we will be dissecting all the hot topics in football. After tweaking the format slightly last week due to the international break, we return for better or worse to our usual format. I hope you like Kicked in the Bin, as it's definitely a topic we will visit soon. With the Champions League action taking place in a few hours, it is an earlier than usual recording, and that also means the long-awaited return of JS. Now, the podcast loss has been journalism's gain as of late, but more importantly, how have you been, my friend?
Yeah, a bit under the weather, actually, Dan. I was ill in bed for about a week, so, sort of on the mend. Generally perky and positive, though. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good, mate, all good. So I'm thankfully not been under the weather, but just slogging on, really, as we get into these autumnal evenings. So, I'm absolutely fine. So let's get cracking. It's just JS running the channels on his own on this one, but as we've got plenty to catch up on, we'll be absolutely fine. So no worries there. I'll best do some social media bits first, otherwise we'll be talking into the abyss once more. First, if you want to get in touch with me, you can. I'm on Twitter, at DanTracy1983. Anything show-related, send it my way. You can find me via iTunes by searching for Real Football Cast. And if you use that platform, don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss a single episode. And if you're not a fan of all things Apple, you can also find me on SoundCloud or Acast. While the easiest way to find all the links is going to realfootballcast.com. As you should know by now, the Real Football Cast is sponsored by Loserpool. And what is Loserpool, I hear you ask? It's a new game that sees betting turned on its head, with the focus being on the loser. If this has grabbed your interest, then be sure to visit loserpool.com and create an account, especially as you can still sign up for the prize pool, which guarantees a winner £1,000, something you'll not want to miss out on. Right then, it's time to go live. And where should we go first? Actually, for a change, let's go to La Liga. Yeah, we're going to sun it up for a bit. And the El Clasico is on the horizon. Now, this week, it will be a Messi-less El Clasico, as the Argentinian has injured his shoulder. That came in a 4-2 win over Sevilla last weekend. At the same time, though, if you were a Barcelona manager, or shall I say if you were Ernesto Valverde, it's probably the one addition to this game you could get away with him not playing. The reason being that Real Madrid lie 7th at present and have just recorded their longest ever goal drought. Now, they suffered another defeat at the weekend. And JS, where has it all gone wrong for Julen Lopetegui?
Joe, I was... was having this debate with someone yesterday. I don't think they're right at the moment, Real. I don't like the way they basically did their, you know, international version of shit housing by basically announcing that it was joining, what was it like, in the middle of World Cup preparations or whatever. And I do actually think, like, the Spanish FA were right to tell him to do one. I think that's a big part of it. Obviously, Zidane's a huge figure at the club, you know, club legend, already tripled by his managerial success. So that's going to be a huge thing. Ronaldo leaving, I dislike him in general, but he's such a great player. He's going to make any team in world football weaker. You have to think players like Modric, who still looks fantastic, but Modric and Ramos are, what are they, 33 and 34 or something now. They're not going to be able to compete at that top level for that much longer, and that's probably where Ronaldo's been quite clever in going to a team where there's slightly less expected of them in Europe. I mean, obviously everyone expects Juve to win the Scudetto, but that's a given with or without Ronaldo, isn't it? So where has it gone wrong? Yeah, losing Ronaldo, the way they hired Julen Lopetegui, bit of a downfall in form. They seem to have a proliferation of sort of central midfielders who can all do similar things. They need to sort that out, because you've already seen Kovacic being farmed out to Chelsea, and he's looked fantastic for them. I think Madrid could do with Kovacic. They don't seem to have as many goals in them as they did before, and obviously some were coming with from Ronaldo. I think Bale would have been better served moving back to the Premier League, either to our beloved Spurs or maybe to United. They need a refresh, like, really, from start to finish. They just need a complete refresh of the team. And the thing is about Lopetegui, they coveted, they did the whole thing where they essentially kind of coaxed him out of the Spanish manager's job. They announced it before the World Cup, so there was a lot of ill will towards them, even from their own fans. Their own fans, famously impatient, they're border impatient. I can't see Lopetegui surviving for that long. Obviously, it upset the balance of what Spain were trying to do at the World Cup, and the whole thing's a complete mess. I don't think the continued Ronaldo reopening of the rape investigations helped either, because you kind of think of everything Real did for Ronaldo over the years. And now Ronaldo's basically throwing Madrid under a bus and basically saying, they made me pay her off. You know what I mean? It's just all these little things off and on field are really upsetting everything they have there at the moment, you know?
If we look to the El Clasico itself, say Real Madrid do lose, is that the last hurrah for Lopetegui? Is he sacked after that? And if so, who fills the gap there? Because at that point of the season, we're looking at what? The end of October. So 2 months into a season, the managerial landscape is somewhat settled. So there's no real obvious candidate. Do they look for an interim safe pair of hands? Well, they did with the post-Rafa Benitez, where I wouldn't say they got lucky, but they got Zidane in and they did great for 3 years. Or do they sort of look for someone like Antonio Conte, who could not only be a safe pair of hands, but could come in straight away and start that revolution early?
Yeah, Conte, sorry, I was thinking of, what's wrong with me, and I was thinking of Ancelotti for some reason when you said that. If Conte can't handle the egos in the dressing room at Chelsea, he's going to get eaten alive at Real. That wouldn't work there, especially if Jose Mourinho can't handle the egos at the Real Madrid dressing room, and Conte couldn't handle the egos in the Chelsea dressing room, he's going to get absolutely eaten alive at Real. I don't think that would be a good choice. If they do sack Lopetegui this early on, I'm going to be genuinely livid about that, because I do think Real do kind of feel they can ride roughshod over a lot of European football. And then when they did it to the national team, that really fucks me off. It really upset the balance of their World Cup. And this is really now getting to the stage where they kind of feel like they're bigger than international teams, and that's where football dies for me. So if they then just sack him after, what, 9-10 games, because they've decided he's not good enough to sort of sort all of this out, but I'm just, it's going to make my blood boil, I swear to God. You'll see me in the cardiac unit next week in my local hospital.
Let's play devil's advocate, and let's say that Lopetegui is sacked, for better or worse, and then there's a safer pair of hands at season through to the end of the season. And then the merry-go-round really picks up a pace. And then do Tottenham fans have cause to be worried if Lopetegui gets sacked? Because then that link surfaces its ugly head again, doesn't it?
It depends what happens. I mean, I think fundamentally Pochettino is quite a sensible bloke. I think he still likes the idea of building a dynasty at Spurs. I don't think he's a mercenary. I mean, you know, Levy's already just given him a $2.5 million a year pay rise, and pay rises for his three musketeers. So I think he's one of those sensible managers that would look at the Madrid job, look at its record, and look at the risk and reward, because, you know, he might go there and win, like, a Champions League and still get fired. he might go and win three La Ligas in a row and lose two Champions League finals and still get fired. I just don't think he's that kind of bloke. I don't think he'll look at it and go, that's a poison chalice. I don't think he's stupid enough to kind of go there and think everything will be great, even if I'm winning. I can't see it, you know what I mean? I can't see him making the decision to do that. If Pochettino were to leave Spurs, he would go to a club that had a lot more stability to it. It would be to somewhere like, Man City or somewhere like that, if he was going to go to a money club, because they're not really trigger happy at City. PSG, if he wanted to do one of those kind of stopgap ones, that's really a win-win, because, you know, if you do get fired, you've made a ridiculous amount of money. But if he goes to Madrid and fails, there's going to be limited clubs he could go to after that. I see him being a bit more of a sensible type, a bit like Pep, going to somewhere like Bayern Munich or somewhere like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, let's hope he doesn't go anywhere unless he, you know, just stays in Tottenham. But I think you're right. I think he's sort of, would he trade everything he's got and the opportunity to be the modern-day Bill Nicholson, as it were, and create that real legacy at the club and trade that in for the quick wins of a couple of Champions League? And then that's maybe the short route to success, but the longer route would be the one that's more worthwhile, isn't it? So
I agree. And even if, to look at it at the worst possible case and we do lose him, I don't think he would go to a club like Chelsea or like Real Madrid where they're so trigger happy with their managers. I do genuinely believe it would be to a really stable club like Bayern Munich or even like Manchester City, where they really do back the managers. They really do give them a lot of time. You know, he's a sensible bloke. It would be risk and reward. If he goes to a top level European job, you know, even Man United, something like that. You know what I mean? I can see him going to one of those kind of clubs. I can't see him going and risking it all at Real for a couple of seasons. I think he's clearly got good advisors. He's got a sensible head on his shoulders. I can't see him doing it. I just can't see him taking the Madrid job.
Yeah, I think on the balance of probabilities, you're probably right for the reasons you've laid out. But let's go to the Premier League now. And first we'll go to the Emirates, as it's freshest in the memory, as it took place last night. Arsenal and Mesut Ozil in particular were purring as they eventually come out on top against Leicester. They're the form team at the moment, JS. Mm. What can they do to bridge the gap to be considered real title contenders and not just also-rans?
Do you know what? Funnily enough, I was having a similar discussion about this yesterday as well. I don't actually think they've quite got enough to bridge the gap to the top four this year, let alone, definitely not a title challenge this year. I'll explain. I still think Spurs, Chelsea, City and Liverpool will be the top four, simply because I think they have better strength in depth in their squads than Arsenal do. And doing that Thursday, Sunday thing's a killer. We know about this. It's almost like that perpetual limbo where you can't break the cycle, because the Thursday-Sunday thing's knackering, and I do believe that will catch up with them at some point over the season. Emery's got them playing really nicely. I actually watched that game yesterday. It was really entertaining. Arsenal played some really good football. Guendouzi looks like an incredibly gifted young footballer. I think they've got the bones there. I think this season will be a bit too soon for them. But I think if Emery, for example, gets in a couple of decent players in January, you know, maybe even if it's like Ndombele to go with Guendouzi, you know, although they do similar-ish things, but can you imagine a two of them in a pivot? I can't imagine when those two had got a lot of experience, anybody would be getting through with them. It would be like having mini Vieira and mini Roy Keane in the same team or something. But what have they got to do? I don't think they've got enough to win a title in the next few years. I do think they'll be in the top four again next year, which, you know, is going to be highly dependent on Spurs, how Spurs and probably Liverpool go over the next year and what we do with transfers and stuff like that. So, but they do look good. They definitely look better. Just don't think the squad depth in terms of quality is there this year to probably even get in the top four. Definitely not as high as a challenge.
It's now 7 straight league wins for them, and all of them have come when they've drawn at half time. And I tipped this to happen on Sunday. I said, if you've got any smart money, bet on that, and it happened. So whether someone took my advice, I don't know. But it does show that they're prepared to dig in. They don't necessarily have to dig into the end. They didn't have to last night. But does it also show they have got a plan B when they need it? Because they're sort of, Emery's sort of willing to change tact. He's got options off the bench that can turn a draw into a win. And if you compare it to last season, they wouldn't have won 7 in a row in that situation under Wenger. It probably would have been nearer sort of 3 or 4, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, last season and probably the season before, they were kind of like how Spurs used to be, you know, in the sort of Inter Champions League years, where we'd play attractive football, but we didn't have a lot of bite or backbone to us. They reminded me a lot of us in that era. Emery seems to have come in. I do think having someone like Guendouzi has helped. He just looks like he wants to, you know, kill everyone who has the ball if his team doesn't have it. You know what I mean? He looks like he wants to hunt people down and go through them. And they haven't had that for so many years. And I think, like I said, bringing in people like Lichtsteiner, who's quite a hard guy as well, just having that voice in the dressing room is a huge thing. And they actually look like a more committed squad again. They look like they've got a bit of steel back, and I think that was one of the sort of key elements at Sevilla when Emery had them as well. He'd make sure they played games for 90 minutes, didn't give up, and I think that's reaping dividends for Arsenal at the moment.
Yeah, I think you're right. In terms of the team they beat last night, Leicester, the funny statistic there is they've not drawn a game this season. They either win or they lose. Now, that sort of guarantees you mid-table football come the end of the season.
Yeah.
Is that enough to keep Claude Puel in a job? I mean, he keeps sort of being linked that he's under pressure. We've seen when he was Southampton manager that even finishing 8th wasn't enough to keep him in employment at the end of the season. So what do Leicester define as success this season? What does Puel need to do to stay in a job? I mean,
Just a very quick one on that Claude Puel one at Southampton. The absolute state of that club at times, you know. My dad's a Saints fan. He hates Spurs because he feels we were their downfall. Because basically we nicked the manager and all their players and then appointed out we've pretty much only had Bale off them in a few years, you know, but he doesn't listen. But as for Claude Puel, I don't know what's up with their board. They just do it to themselves. They finish 8th. Get to a cup final and they're like, no, that isn't enough. It's like, what in their heads do their board think they should be doing? Like, winning the FA Cup and finishing in what? Like, the European places or above? Is that really what they thought any other manager was going to come in and do?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And now it's sort of diminishing returns, isn't it? Because you look at Southampton a few years back, you know, under sort of Pochettino and Koeman, this constant conveyor belt of talent, and you know they're still producing young players, but they've lost that identity, haven't they? They lost that thing that sort of made them a great team to watch, and just on the precipice of European places and getting into Europe. And now it's this sort of death by a thousand cuts, almost, isn't it, under Mark Hughes? And
it sounds super harsh, but they kind of look a bit like Stoke did for years. You know what I mean? They're not like, at least Swansea always had that sort of free-flowing attacking football. Wasn't always effective, but it was at least good to watch, you know. I don't know. I mean, Leicester Leicester, God, what should they be doing? I mean, they've had no real influx of, you know, money since the days of when they pumped in, like, I think it was fourth or fifth most amount that season. They won it. They don't really seem to have reinvested the Mahrez or the Kante money particularly, or certainly not particularly well. And
that's right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Well, you'd say like mid-table's just par, isn't it? Like, if they finish 10th, I don't think that's a disgrace at all, really. I don't think it's something that lends itself to being...
As an outsider of Leicester, and I've now got a bit of a soft spot for them because of how they won the league against all the odds and all the rest of it, but as an outsider, should Leicester really be finishing above 10th now they keep selling off all their best players?
Well, that's right, isn't it?
They shouldn't, should they?
No.
But your question was, what would the board consider successful for Puel not to get sacked? Who knows? Where do you think their board thinks they should be? Challenging for the European places, maybe? I mean, Europa League, you know, obviously.
Yeah, I think everyone in that bracket, let's say, like, Leicester, Everton, Wolves, maybe even Watford, like, they all want to be this best of the rest, don't they? And they think, like...
Burnley, you know, as well.
So if you can't finish sixth, let's at least be seventh and maybe get into the Europa League. And it's like, if we're not seventh, then that's failure. But that's a really hard objective to sort of go for, because only one team can be that. And then you've got five, maybe six teams gunning for that one. So then you've got, have five teams failed? And you think, well, no, not really. It's just that, you know, the gap between seventh and tenth, it's how can one be successful and one not really? Because ultimately, they're not that dissimilar, are they? So it's very, very hot. I mean, if it was like 7th and 15th, you think, okay, it's a bad season. But to finish 10th with that kind of group of clubs you're competing with, I don't think that's a disgrace. But
it's a bit like the first to 6th thing, isn't it? It's like, genuinely, almost no... Say we fast-forwarded to the end of the season and hadn't played a game yet, and you saw the top 6 in almost any order... There's almost nothing that would shock you in what the order was. You know what I mean? Unless it was, say, City had finished 6th, for example. But really, if, say, City were top 2 and someone else had won it, no huge shocks. And I agree with you, 7th to 10th, there's no huge shocks there. I mean, you know, and like you say, they're boards. Unless they get super lucky and have... you know, get someone in like Eddie Howe at Bournemouth, who clearly has a track record of being able to improve the club out of all recognition on very, very little. You know, they're going to struggle. I mean, I think Everton are probably looking pretty good out of that lot this year. But they're so patchy as well, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they've hit form at the moment, but that's only, I think, three... wins in a row. But
three in a row is amazing for Everton, because that's nine points, obviously. That just really pushes you away from the rest and puts pressure on them, you know.
Yeah, because they had quite a sort of sluggish start, really. I think it was only one win in the first five, albeit they drew three of those. It wasn't kind of crisis, but for the sort of expenditure and the dreams that they had, you're thinking, oh, hang on.
Actually, I think they were a bit unlucky, and I definitely at least one of the games I watched they lost, you know, and some of the games they drew they should have won, and all the rest of it. Like, that Everton could have been in the top 4 at the moment. It's one of those just real, like, do you know what I mean? They're having a really unlucky season. If so, you know, just little turns of the, it's not quite going their way at the moment, or rather it wasn't, it clearly is now. So I think they're going to do quite well. I think they might, you know, sort of even be challenging for 6th this year when all is said and done.
We'll go to the team which has at least got hopes of top 6, and that's Man United. And Stamford Bridge is where they played on Saturday, where it was on as even, although it must be said the column inches were written more about proceedings on the touchline at the end than opposed to actually on the pitch. So first, I'd like your thoughts on the scuffle, or the sort of the set to, and then... was the draw a right result? So a sort of two-part question, if you could fire away on that one.
Oh, God. To be honest, it's probably going to sound really bad, but I actually found the scuffle quite funny.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Because, you know, in punch like, oh, we don't want to see that. And you're like, actually, yeah, we didn't want to see
actually,
that.
Actually, yeah, we do. It's like, I was reading some of the reactions, and this is a perfect example of how middle-class football has become now. There was some, like, I mean, clearly quite well-educated people on there going, oh, this is shocking, it shouldn't be in the game. And you're there like, fucking hell, mate, have you ever even been to a football match? It's fun. I want to see that passion. And then it was like, the FA are going to give the clubs warnings. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. Because the FA are kind of going, yeah, we sort of need to be seen to be doing something about it. But really, that's going to mean fuck all. It's not like they've slapped them with fines and touchline bans. Yeah. Do I love the Chelsea head of sports science or whatever he was, like, running up the touchline and celebrating wildly right in front of Mourinho, and then Mourinho reacting, and then all the squads? Of course I'd be. Like, as long as it doesn't go stupidly far and people are literally getting broken noses and stuff like that, it was pretty handbags, the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not like they suddenly started pulling out baseball bats and chainsaws, you know what I mean? It was okay, I want to see that. I want to see a bit of fire and passion, you know? I want to see that from players and managers, you know? So I thought that was great. So I think the draw, I think that probably was about a fair result on balance, I think. I think Chelsea pretty much dominated it. Not necessarily dominated it, but I felt they were in control of the game until United scored, and then they seemed to get their tails up, and it really looked like United were just going to run away with it after that. And fair play to Chelsea, they really, really dug in. That was quite nice to see. And there's nothing like a sort of, even though it wasn't a winner, it kind of felt like one for them. There's nothing better in football than that, is there? Where you think all hope's gone, and then in the dying second, someone just bangs one in. I thought that was a great game, you know.
I made the cardinal sin. I was watching it in the pub, and I made the cardinal sin of leaving in the 95th minute.
What are you doing with your life? Oh my God.
What was more strange is for about 4 hours, I was still under the impression that United won. So I sort of then looked on Twitter and everyone was going about this Ross Barkley goal, and I was like, why are you talking about Ross Barkley's goal against Southampton? And it's just that was just like another panic. And then it dawned on me, I was like, what, 2-2? Like, what an idiot. And I felt really cross to myself. So lesson learned on that one. Never leave regardless.
Ever. But, no, never.
United seems to be they're playing their best when they're behind. And now that is a strategy that has earned them 4 points in the last two matches, but at the same time it's not really one you can get away with on a weekly basis. So more importantly, how can they turn in better performances from minute one?
you know that game, the free association game where someone says something and then you have to say the first thing that comes into your head?
Yes.
When you asked me that question, literally the first words that came into my head were "sack Mourinho."
Well, you know, that's not necessarily a wrong answer.
So that's clearly how I feel deep down. But I don't like the football they play under Mourinho. In fact, I've rarely liked any football any team has ever played under Mourinho, to be honest. And whilst obviously I'm not like, I want United to get back to the glory days. I mean, I'm a Spurs fan, but I don't hate them as much as I hate, you know, our normal rivals. And it's weird to see, let's be honest, they are the jewel in the crown of the English club/league system, aren't they? It's a bit like, you know, AC Milan or Juve or Barca or the other ones, Real Madrid, you know what I mean. And it's not like I want to see them winning loads again, because obviously I'd like to see Tottenham step up and start winning things. But that famous red shirt, you know, the shirt of George Best and Bobby Charlton and, throughout history, Cantona, these great players, or flying wingers like Giggs, or even Ronaldo when he was there. I want to see those famous red shirts flying down wings, scaring defences, and sort of being Man United again. It was like, I don't know if you caught any of, did you catch Ajax's game the other week in the Champions League?
No, I didn't, mate, sorry.
I really do watch too much football. I think I watched three Champions League games that night because, one of them was in, Russia or somewhere, so it was on at about 5 o'clock here, so it was perfect. But Ajax were playing their old-school total football again, and it was beautiful, and it looked right, those famous white shirts with the red stripe or sash. Playing total football looked right. United playing defensive football, where they hope to hit teams on the counter. It is depressing to watch that. It's not United, is it? It's a weird shell of United at the moment, and they don't look right. They've got one of the world's best players in Paul Pogba, despite what Souness says. That is down to Mourinho not getting the best out of Paul Pogba, because Deschamps showed it in 5, 6, 7 games, whatever it was, at the World Cup, how to play him, and all of a sudden he looks like one of the world's best players again. Mourinho's not doing that, and I think, as Scholes said, Scholes said this last week, I think, Messi could go to Man United and Jose Mourinho would make him worse and probably turn him into a left wing back.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually. But in terms of their defence, that's also been an issue. They're on a negative goal difference, and they usually rely on David De Gea, so he's a different player this season, isn't he? So is that down to him? Is that down to the back four in front of him? Where's it all going wrong in the defensive third for United?
That's another really tough one. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think Dalot probably is going to need a bit more time to kind of blend into the group. You know what I mean? But yeah. Apart from that, it looks like a really top centre-back, so you can kind of be a bit forgiving on that. Through the Moyes years and the Van Gaal years, whilst they are very good defenders like Smalling and Jones, for me, aren't of the quality United should have. You know what I mean? If they can, not afford, because they essentially swapped them with Mkhitaryan, but if they can go out and spend 70 million on Fred, or however much on Lukaku, and get Sanchez in and all the rest of it, why can't they go out there and sign someone like Matthias De Ligt from Ajax? Why can't they go out and sign, Godin, or Alexandra at left back from Juve? You know what I mean? Why are they not getting the balance right in their transfer dealings? Because Smalling and Jones are very, very good players, and they would still be a top team, wouldn't they? I mean, they are good players. They'd still probably get into, Arsenal. At worst, they'd be playing for someone like Everton. But they're not United quality.
No, sort of that ship's slightly sailed now, isn't it? And they need to evolve in the back line. So I think not getting someone of the ilk of Harry Maguire or
Alderweireld
in the
summer. Or Alderweireld, yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. They sort of, but then we don't even know how much of that was true, do
yeah,
we?
Yeah, that is true.
Honest. I mean, so many of those rumours are made up to drive betting and sell newspapers. Maybe United never even wanted Danny Rose at any point. Maybe they never even wanted Alderweireld, but it sells copies. So, there you go. And they certainly didn't come in with a bid, because we would have known about that. So how strong could their interest have been?
That is very true, isn't it? Like I say, it's all conjecture. What do we really know? But what we do know is that Chelsea have dropped points, and there's just two teams now at the joint summit, and one of those is Liverpool. And they were made to work for the win against Huddersfield. Now, it wasn't a vintage performance from Jurgen Klopp's men, but is it one of those ones that sort of shows a championship-winning pedigree? Because they're really, and I know people talk about it's what you do against the big six, but sometimes it's when the chips are down and you're not playing well, you still come away with 3 points. Sometimes they're the more important ones.
Do you think they're any different from Spurs this year in that regard? I know we fucked up at Watford, but we are now starting to win those gritty games. We did it at the weekend as well.
Well, it's actually going to be a later question, but I'll ask it now. So, I mean, had we beat Watford, we would have been top of the league. And, you know, there's a lot of what-ifs and all that. But it's Tottenham aren't playing that free-flowing football that they were known for a couple of seasons ago.
No.
Tottenham didn't win anything. Now, would you take Tottenham just playing ugly and winning if it meant silverware? Do you know what I mean? Like this sort of real, sort of raw sort of set of performances. It's not great and it's not easy on the eye, but is that the difference that Tottenham need?
I've always said no to this question in the past because I'm Tottenham through and through and I love that we've always been an attacking, free-flowing club. But I think I would this season just to get the monkey off the back. You know what I mean? Just to get it off the back, just to get people to shut up about it. But then you know what people will say. It will be like, oh, it was only the FA Cup, or if we won the league, it will be like, it's only because City messed up or whatever. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll never get the credit.
It will never happen. But yeah, I would take it this season. And that's why I drew the parallels with Liverpool and Spurs. We've finished above them, what is it, 8 out of 9 years now?
Yeah, that's right.
8 out of 9 years. We finished above them last year. Liverpool have had a pretty similar start to us. What are they? I think they're only 2 points ahead, are they?
That's correct, yep.
We've had our best ever start to a Premier League season. We've had injuries, and we haven't hit anything like our best form yet. And yet, with the kind of... This is a real media thing that they do. They love to build up the clubs like Liverpool and United when they're doing well. And they don't care about Tottenham. It doesn't matter that we've had more points under Pochettino than any other club has in that period in the league. Our season, if you read about how it's being presented to us as fans, is that we've had this disastrous start to the season. And Liverpool, who have had an extremely similar start, are now being talked as genuine title winners. And
yeah, something's gone a bit wrong there, isn't it? Like,
yeah, and for me, I think it's just about equal. I think honestly, I still think City will win the league. I think Liverpool will have a dip at some point. All's clearly not right there. I mean, it's not fitting together quite yet. Spurs seems to be a little bit more on the same page. We've got our key players coming back. Whereas largely that is Liverpool full strength and they're just not quite getting there. But both teams are winning ugly. And that is, like you say, a measure of clubs that can put a title challenge in.
Yeah, I think you're right, to be honest. I mean, it's not really fashionable to talk as Tottenham as bona fide title contenders. But when you lay it out and you sort of say, well, Liverpool are doing all this and Tottenham are doing all this, they're not a million miles apart, so why would you sort of put...
Well, of course, yeah, of course we are. It's not even like saying, on that note, it's not saying like, oh, everyone should be going nuts and saying, oh, look at Spurs, they've had these injuries, they're still winning ugly, they're only 2 points off the top and all the rest of it, you know. But actually, our coverage has been, oh, it's been a disaster and blah, 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 and it's like, we've actually just had our best start to a season, and yet Liverpool... They're very, very similar starts, and yet they really are just being raved about as title contenders. And I find it weird because everyone started raving about them last year, but they finished below us.
Absolutely. I mean, like I say, if we beat Watford, we would have been top. But would you still see the narrative as not being considered title contenders because, you know, it just doesn't fit the agenda for this season.
I don't think it does fit the agendas for this season. I think most of the media, because Liverpool, and a lot of this stuff, don't forget, is done on traffic and therefore advertising revenue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So the clickbait stuff, and Liverpool have got a lot of very, 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 very passionate fans who will take the clickbait, you know what I mean, and run with it. If they write something even remotely negative, they know that's going to get loads of stuff. So yeah, I do think the media want Liverpool to win it this year. You know, I don't remember the Sergio Aguero documentary when he literally won the league for Man City. And to highlight the point we're making, Salah has won, admittedly, great season. Channel 4 did a one-hour hagiography on him. You know, I haven't seen Kane's one of those. No, true. You know, it's ridiculous.
Well, it's like when football365.com just have wall-to-wall Arsenal articles, because they know that drives the traffic, which drives their revenue, and it's just like,
yeah,
you can just see through it straight away, can't you? So,
and we as Spurs fans need to start doing better on not clicking about the negative stuff on us, because it drives their revenue up.
Yeah. That's
what we need to do, is when they're like, oh, you know, if Lopetegui does get sacked, a million articles will be about Pochettino leaving. Don't click on them. Don't give them money. Starve their oxygen, because they're shit.
Absolutely. If you stop feeding the machine, then these articles go away very quickly.
But, and that goes for all of Talk Sport as well.
Yeah, exactly. With the Adrian Darren thing, it's like moss to a flame. And he says a comment, and you can see it a mile off. And people just latch onto it and have this, and it just, you know, people retweet it and they comment. And you're like, what are you doing? Just leave them alone. Like,
oh, it's oxygen. It drives, you know, listenership and blah blah blah. They'll know Adrian Durham actually isn't a stupid bloke.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Most of that will be coming down from the producers and the managers saying, oh look, we've got these metrics that say when you say something controversial about dot dot dot, or you call this player shit, we get a spike in engagement and all of the rest of it. You know, we need to be more savvy as fans, and we need to do more about getting the message out about this, because people aren't idiots. But when they see it there, it's so easy to react so quickly on the social media, and so you just write stuff like, fuck you, Durham, you ginger, you know what I mean, and all the rest of it. And it just goes like that. And it's like, stop feeding them, then us as readers, as fans, will start getting better coverage. And we can start to trust the media again, because they'll be forced to do it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But unfortunately, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit out there, isn't there? So
And that's my rant for the week. I think that should be a section anytime I'm on.
Yeah, I think we can have that. Well,
I can't tell you when it's going to come now. I just get triggered, as the kids say.
That's all right. I need a klaxon or something. Right. But let's get back to some on-pitch action. And
The klaxon can just keep sounding whilst I'm speaking, so everyone else doesn't have to listen to it.
Drowns it out.
Or whatever. Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, right. Yeah.
If we go back to Tottenham, and the history books will say that Eric Lamella got the winner, but in fairness, you've got to give that accolade to Hugo Lloris, really, haven't you? Because three fantastic saves were ultimately the difference against West Ham on Saturday.
I actually, Gerald, this is weird, because this is the first time this ever happened on here, was actually having this discussion about Hugo Lloris, and I said I would still have him in the top five world keepers, basically. His mistakes get pounced on and highlighted more than anyone else, but I'm one of those weird people. I love goalkeepers. I don't think they get the credit they deserve. They only seem to be in the news when they make a mistake, i.e. Loris Karius at Liverpool last year, etc., etc. But in terms of shot stopping, he's definitely in the top five of the world. In terms of organising his defence, he's in the top five of the world. As the sweeper keeper thing, maybe top six, seven. His distributions, let's say, become a little bit more patchy the last few years. But the important things he does, leading his team from the back, organising the defence well, and being a world-class shot stopper, puts him in there. And I think that was a vintage Hugo display and answered a lot of his critics, and I was chuffed for him at the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exactly what he needed. Obviously, that shaky start, not even on the pitch, just you know, through injury and whatnot,
right,
driving all that. He just needed it, and it was like, he's back. Mm. And I think if we can have more of that, it also gives confidence to Tottenham's back four as well, because we tried the same tactic against Watford, right, where we went ahead and then decided to let the opposition onto us, but we had Michel Vorming goal, and that was the difference, I think. Mm. If we had Lloris in goal against Watford and deployed those same kind of tactics, I think we would have won, we'd have been top, but c'est la vie, that's life, isn't it?
Although I do think Paolo Gazzaniga looks very good.
Yeah, yeah, as you compliment him as well. He helped start the run, didn't he, win against Brighton, so...
He did, and also what I would say about Lloris, and you touched on it very well about instilling confidence in the defence, Davinson Sanchez needs that, because he's suddenly thrown into a back two with... Jan Vertonghen, or you know, back three, whatever it is, if Dyer's going to drop in there, and he's a young lad he just looks incredible. I love Sanchez, but he needs that calm head behind him. He needs to know his goalkeeper's not going to make mistakes, he's going to back him up, because he has looked a little bit lost in that new formation the last couple of games, Sanchez. And I think that will benefit him the most. Before we move on from Spurs, can I just give a... I never thought I didn't think these words would ever leave my lips, but really quick shout out to Moussa Sissoko.
Yeah, if you want, yeah.
Genuinely.
No,
I've been one of his biggest critics over the last 2 years, largely because... When you watched him with France at the Euros, he was one of the best three players, and I thought, that's what we need. We need that ball carrier who can just suddenly pick it up deep and, you know, run through loads of people and set up opportunities. And he hadn't really been doing it for Spurs. I don't know whether it was a confidence thing. I don't know whether it was because he came on during games we needed to see out or game manage, but... When he came on the other night, who did he come on against? Struggling to remember now.
Who did we beat before West Ham? We beat
Cardiff.
Yes.
And when he came on, he actually started to make a few of those runs, and I thought, yes, Moussa, that's the one we want to see, you know. And then he did it a lot at the weekend, and I thought that was easily his best game in a Spurs shirt. Admittedly, the bar's not that high, but he suddenly looked like he didn't look out of place in the team, you know? And that was completely exemplified by his cross, which, let's be honest, that was on his weaker foot. That was his left foot, that cultured little delivery into Lamella, to the... header, and Lamella barely even needed to generate any pace, it was so good. And yeah, that's all I wanted to say. Basically, big kudos to Sissoko. My theory was that he basically got kidnapped straight after the Euros 2 years ago. He's been trapped in someone's basement. They sent out a lookalike, you know, they thought we wouldn't notice the difference because they think we're all racist and black people look the same. So they thought they'd just send someone who looks a bit like him out there. And he wasn't a footballer, he was just like a chartered accountant or something, you know. And then Sissoko managed to finally tunnel his way out, Shawshank Redemption style, and he's come back. He killed the other guy off. Snapped his neck, one thing, you know, ninja movie style. And we seem to suddenly have the Moussa Sissoko we actually signed.
It sounds like a relatively plausible explanation, and one may continue. Over to Fulham now, and I've said a couple of weeks now that their goals could be enough to keep them up. But at the same time, it is their leaky defence that will send them down. 25 goals have been shipped in their first 9 matches. That's 2.77 per game, which in any currency is relegation form. Now, Slavica Kanovic is a man who likes to play open, expansive football, but surely that's going to have to change if they are to beat the drop. Now, JS, does this boil down to tactical naivety? Is he too rigid in his ways, thinking, I've got a system that's worked previously, and that's the only way we're going to do stuff? or is there something else that's underlying there? What's your take on all things Fulham?
I think they've got quite a lot of new players to bed in. Some teams seem to be able to do it a little more quickly than others, but you have to bear in mind as well. They've also had defenders out injured. You know, like LeMarchand wasn't available for a few games. It's gonna take time. I think they'll be okay though. I don't think they'll go down, simply because I think there are three teams worse than them, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, like I said, they've got enough goals to keep them up. So this, it's not a quick fix, but it's something that can be solved quite quickly in the sense that, well, just said it's not a quick fix, but you know what I mean? It's the sense that it only needs a couple of tweaks. They just need to be a bit more pragmatic.
Yes.
And then they should be fine, because it doesn't really change what they do in the final two-thirds of the pitch. It's almost what they're doing.
But then, like you said earlier, it might not have been you, it might have been someone else, but some managers have their favourite players, don't they? Or you're talking about him being rigid, they love a certain system, they love a certain way of playing, etc, etc. He does need to learn how to be a bit more pragmatic, because it's a little bit like what's happening with Kimmich at Bayern in Germany at the moment. It isn't working. Yogi Löw refuses to employ him in any other way. And now Kovac has actually had quite a poor start at Bayern.
Yep.
Employing him the same way. So, if you look at Fulham, yes, actually, they've got some great attacking players in there. Sessegnon seems to be finally sort of coming to grips with the Premier League. Andre Schürrle, yeah, obviously is not at his peak, but you never lose a base level of talent when you're that good. And he's going to help them a lot. They've got Mitrovic, who can score. He's a bullying centre forward. That's what he should be doing. He's not bullying people enough at the moment. It's almost like he's too respectful of some of them. You know what I mean? Especially with Arsenal. He should have been sort of getting in their face. You know, that's what they need. They need a little bit more grit to go with that attacking flair. Whether that's in, you know, recruiting in January, maybe one or two more, or maybe it's in, like you say, just slightly tweaking it. So, yeah, it's a little bit more pragmatic and work on the defensive side a lot in training. But I don't know. They're exciting. They're fun to watch. It's kind of like a really bad version of how Spurs used to be. Their philosophy seems to be, we'll just try and outscore whoever we're playing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they've certainly been a decent addition to the Premier League, but I think they need to change things if they want to be there for
definitely agree, mate. They need to sort it out defensively. I do think they'll be all right, though. I think it's a little bit of false economy. They had really bad luck with defensive injuries early on. And they are bedding in pretty much half of a new team. In fact, I think there's only about two or three of them who played in the Championship last year in their first choice 11, isn't there?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I think they will be fine. I mean, I don't think they're going to put up too many trees. It might be sort of 15th, but I think they'll just be on the right side of the dotted line, which leads us to our loser pool picks of the week. Now, last week was a bit of a mixed bag because my two guests got it wrong. Matthew, who was on the show for the first time, who had a cracking debut trying to kick stuff into the bin, he went for Brighton to lose at Newcastle. Got that wrong. Cole went for our second favourite team in this podcast, Wolves. He went for a Wolves win, so that was a Watford pick. Wrong, and I was the only one who got one right, and even me nearly got that wrong, because Everton Palace was 0-0 with about, 86 minutes to go.
Oh, crazy.
But thankfully, crazy. I've never celebrated an Everton goal so much as Palace lost 2-0. So, I came out on top last week, but we reset the clock to zero as we go this week. So, Carl,
let me get this right. Despite the fact that I've not been on for a couple of weeks.
Well, you sort of bugger the league format, to be honest. Let's just say you won, because you've sort of, you've had
So let me get this right. You basically reset it because I was winning.
Well, I think I'm just going to have to do sort of weekly picks, because I can't, there's no sort of continuity from week to week. Because I don't know, do you know what I mean? Like, I need to work a new format. So, congratulations, JS, you are our autumn champion, shall I say.
Yeah, I'll take that.
You've won the first silverware of the season, first loser pool prize. But now, let's see if you're good for your money this week. So, Cole, who can't join us because it's an early recording, so big shout-out to Cole, as always. He'll be back with us next week. He's gone for Spurs, his own Spurs, to lose at home to Manchester City on Monday. Now,
state of you, Cole. Terrible.
Yes. I can see why he's done it. Do I agree with it? No. So,
I don't actually agree. I think we'll draw that.
Yeah, I mean, it's my birthday on Monday, so I'm going to that game, and I would love at least a point. That's all I ask, Tottenham. But, yes, Cole's gone for Spurs to lose at home to City.
That is such a Spurs fan thing to do.
Yes, I like it.
We'll lose to City. Yeah, that's fine.
The glass is definitely half empty on that one.
I don't think he even has a glass.
No, it's just spilt everywhere. But I backed Everton last week to win. I'm now going to flip that around, and I reckon they're going to lose at home to away to Man United, which. I know United aren't, you know, great at the moment, but I just think, I don't know. I mean, they have got 4 points out of six. If they can get the first goal, then I think they should be fine. But knowing my luck, that could end up being a draw. And that's not to say,
I'd go a draw on that one. Ooh. But I'm not going to talk you out of it.
No, that's fine. So. I'm going for that one. And JS, as autumn champion of our losable picks, has gone with quite an easy pick this week, but I think that's the champion's right, as he's gone with Cardiff to lose away at Liverpool. So, I mean, really, I don't think we're going to learn anything from that one. Be a shock if it doesn't happen. I don't think you really need to explain either why, Carl, do you? Jace. Whatever.
Cole's not here, is he?
He's just radioing in.
In my head, even though I knew he wasn't here, I was just waiting for him to speak then. So I was like, yeah, okay. I've got all of mine right so far.
You have. Actually, if you are following at home, just always follow what JS does, because he always gets them right. So, if anything, it's more about an undefeated streak that we're playing for now. Can JS beat football? That's the game we'll be playing for the rest of the season. Can JS beat football? So
Cardiff. Yes. They're going to... I think Liverpool will finally hit a bit of their stride and hammer them like 3-0 or something.
Oh, he's given us a score as well, actually. I like that. Maybe we should have them to back them up as well. But good idea. I think you're about right. Best do some admin. So the apologies this week go to Newcastle and Brighton fans. That was a decent sort of a topic, but it's, you know, not going well for Newcastle, so probably best we didn't mention that. Again, apologies to Wolves and Watford fans, didn't have time for that one. Everton Palace, we just about spoke about for a second or two, so that one's covered. Bournemouth Southampton, that just happened. Any 0-0 doesn't get any time of day on this show, so that's the rules. I don't even watch them a match of the day. If it's 0-0, it does not exist. So that's the admin bit. I guess if you want to get in touch with me, you can, as I said, on Twitter, at DanTracy1983. If you want to get in touch in terms of comments, feedback, if you want to be on the show, get in touch with me and we'll give you a space during the season. JS, an excellent run out this afternoon, earlier than usual that we do. But as always, it's an absolute pleasure coming on. I know you can't offer your time weekly, but when you do, it's always much appreciated. And I really look forward to picking up this again soon.
Brilliant, Dan. Thanks for having me. I'm probably a bit less drunk than normal as well.
Any time is absolutely, mate.
Drink
as much as you want this show. It's an 18-plus show, so that's absolutely fine. And with that said, it just leaves you to say that my name's Dan Tracy. This is the Real Football Cast in association with Loser Pool. And until next time, goodbye.